Today she is Masechta Chulin Daf Yud Beis, and we will begin in Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, four lines from the top. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav, Ro'achet Sheshochat, if somebody observed somebody else shechting, Imra'u Metchil Vatzoif, if he supervised the Shechita from the beginning to the end, Mutal Lechem Shechitasoi, then they are allowed to eat from the Shechita. Vim Lav, if he did not supervise, if he was not supervised, aslachm shchitasai, one would not be allowed to eat from that shchita. Ask the Gemara Hechidami, exactly what are the circumstances that Rav Nachman is speaking about? Idi yada de gomer, if we know that the person is a capable shaychit lamali ra, so why does he need to be supervised? He's a capable shaychit. And as most Rishonim point out, it's obvious that it's not just enough that we should know that he is familiar with the halacha. What's necessary is also that we should know that he has the necessary skills and also that he won't faint in the middle of the shechita. Others take a different approach, and their approach is that we're certain that if somebody will shecht and he faints in the middle or he pauses in the middle, he'll report it. The halacha, he may not be aware of all the halachas, therefore knowing the halacha is what's crucial in him being allowed to shecht unsupervised. Vidi yada de loy gomer, if on the other hand we're dealing with an individual who we know doesn't know the halacha, pshita, that he has to be supervised. So the mefarshim make an observation. I don't have time to go through the whole shaklavataria of the Rosh and Rabbi Kiva Eiger, but they make the following observation based on the Gemara that we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, how Ravina explained the Mishnah. It seems that relying on supervision, and we'll speak about this concept again later in today's year, in fact, it's not something that you rely on l'chatchila. You only rely on supervision b'dievet. So the question is an obvious question. Here it seems that we have this individual that doesn't know Hilchos Shechita, and the Gemara is saying, as long as you supervise, it's good enough. How is that? So the Rosh, as Rabbi Kiva Eiger explains, says that there are two types of supervision. There's supervision when you're not really watching carefully. You're standing there, but you're not watching carefully. That is only acceptable by the Evid. But when you're really supervising and paying close attention to what this person is doing, and that's going to be the case here because we're dealing with an individual who you know is loy gomer, who you know doesn't know the halacha, so you're going to do a strong supervision, it's acceptable l'chatchila. So again, back to the Gemara. Rav Nachman made a statement that you have to supervise. And the question is, who are we talking about? Answers the Gemara, Vela, perhaps we're referring to an individual, Dlayoda, we're not quite certain, Igomer, Eloy Gomer, if this individual does or doesn't know Hilchos Shechita. Says the Gemara, if that's the case, why should we have to supervise him? Lema, have we not learned so many times the concept of Roy Mitzuyin Eitz Shechita Mumchahin? We can rely that the person who shechts knows the halacha, because Miloy Tanya, have we not learned the Braisa, and we're going to discuss this Braisa more later in the shir. Hareisha Matzatana Goyle Shchuta B'Shuk. If you find in the street a slaughtered chicken, and as the Meiri says, we're speaking about a community of Jews, so you don't have to worry that it was a non-Jew that shechted it. Oish Amal Shluchai, you appoint a shliach, telling him, Tzei Shchait, go shecht an animal, a bird on my behalf, for haluchu matzu shachut, and then you find that animal, a bird, indeed slaughtered, chaskasa shachut. We could be satisfied. Alma, so obviously what do we see from here? That we don't have to be concerned. Because even if somebody else shechted it, there's nothing to worry about, because we have a rule of roiv mitzuin etz shechita mumchmehen, and we could be comfortable in eating that meat. Hachinami, so if Rav Nachman is referring to an individual who we just don't know is or isn't an expert, why don't we apply the old rule of Lema Roy Mitzuin Eitzashchut Shchita Mumchamein. So we're back to where we started. Rav Nachman made a statement that we have to observe, properly supervise, and who is Rav Nachman talking about? Answers the Gemara, Lailam the Yadad Loi Gomer. We're referring to an individual who we know indeed does not know Hilchah Shchita. But what happened here was, the Shochet Kamon Chatz Simon Shapir. We observed him, we supervised him shechting one of the Simonim properly. Madutem, so we would think, Mida Hai Shapir, if he shechted this Simon properly, even if we didn't supervise the Shechita of the other Simon, Hachnami Shapir, we could make a fair assumption that he shechted the other Simon as well properly. Kamash Bulon, that's why Rav Nachman has to teach us Hai Estrumi Estramile. It's not because he's necessarily an expert. He just got lucky. Idach, Shemeshah, Shemedaris, we have to be concerned that he didn't shecht it properly, and if he wasn't supervised, you can't eat the meat. So ask the Rosh Yosef. Let's go back to the beginning of the Shir. Rav Nachman made two statements. One is that you have to observe from the beginning to the end, and then the next statement is that if you didn't, then it's not, you shouldn't eat that meat. So what the second phrase he said comes to teach us, we now very well understand that you have to watch, and if you didn't, if you missed one simon, even though you saw the other simon, it isn't good enough. But the Gemara still hasn't addressed what is the point of saying the first statement that you have to observe from the beginning to end. So the simple Teretz he himself says there really is no chiddush in the first part of his statement, but it's one big sentence. That's one. But then he and other achronim take two extreme opposite approaches. They say there's a chiddush in the first statement, that if you do observe from the entire shechita, not only is it acceptable, but it's even acceptable l'chatchila. And that's what Rav Nachman is teaching us. If you observe from beginning to end, not only is it good, it's good l'chatchila. If you don't observe everything, then it's not even good b'di'evit. That's one way of understanding. Another way, and since that's the opposite approach, is that Rav Nachman is teaching us, yes, if you observe from the beginning to end the meat is kosher, only b'di'evit. To rely on a shoychet that doesn't know Hilchah Shechita, and all you're doing is you're supervising him, is not something you want to rely on l'chatchila, and that's what the first part of his statement comes to teach us. Continues the Gemara. Bar minei Rav Dimi by Yosef Rav Nachman. Haim l'shluchah, if somebody tells his shliach, tzei u'shchot, go shecht on my behalf. And then that animal that I told him to shecht, I indeed find slaughtered. Mahu, what is the halacha? Amalai, he responded, chaskasa shachat. We could assume that it was slaughtered properly, you could eat the meat. He continues saying, what about ha'omel shluchai? If somebody tells a shliach, tsei v'tron, take off truma from this produce on my behalf. And he indeed finds that it was done. The Miri says, how do we know it was done? Either because we see that the barrel was filled to the top and now it's missing, or we have on the side some produce on the side, which we could easily identify as the truma portion. Mai, what will be the halacha? Can we eat that produce? Amalei, ein cheskasa charm. You can't. So he asked the obvious question. Manashach. Let's understand this. If we're assuming, if we work with a halach principle, that we could assume that we appoint the shlich to do something and he accepts the job, then he has done it properly, so then feel trumanami. So why, by truma, are we machmer? If, on the other hand, if we need to be concerned that the shlich doesn't do what he's appointed to do, so then I feel trumanami like. Then why are we lenient by the shechita? Amalei, so he responded to him, l'chitecha ala kur de milcha. When you'll eat a core of salt, you'll know the answer. Some of the Farshim, of course, all try to say pshat. What does it mean, eat a core of salt? So one pshat that Rashi seems to learn, it's a milsta b'dechusa. He was just like saying something, doesn't really, it's just some sort of a sarcastic remark. Another pshat that he told him, was that your kasha is such a good question that there's really no answer to your question. Just like it's unlikely that you're going to eat a kor of salt, it's unlikely you're going to come up with an answer. Another pshat that I saw, very interesting pshat, I don't know if it's medically proven, the Noid of Yehuda says that people who have in their body a higher sodium content are smarter people. And he has a raya, because many times the Gemara, when I want to refer to a smart person, calls him an Adam Mamulach, salted person. What's that? He's a salted person, because he has a higher sodium content. So he says, if you'll eat salt, then you'll be smart enough to answer the question. But fourth pshat that I saw, a very beautiful pshat. It's interesting to note, you know, most food, you have to add spice to the food to make it tasty. Why? Why does Hashem make it that way, that you have to add spice to food to make it tasty? The answer is, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to work. Nothing should come easy. You have to work. You want to eat something tasty? Cook it well. Spice it well. So you're saying the same thing. You're asking a good question, and the question has an answer. But you know how you get to the answer? You have to work on getting to the answer. You have to try to think of a good answer, and you'll come up with an answer. So he said, Ein chazaka, loyim ein chazaka shliach oseh shlichusoy. We can't assume that a shliach does a shlichus. And there's a fantastic mahalach in the Rishonim here. We look at the Tosfos, three Tosfos from the bottom. Loyim ein chazaka shliach before it's prepared koma arvin. Tosfos says three words, four words. We don't even know what he means. So we have to look at the Gemara and Masechta Arvin. This is the way the Mefarshim explain what Tosfos is coming to say. There's two approaches. The Gemara in Masechta Erevin discusses this very question. If somebody appointed somebody to make an Erev on his behalf, can he assume that the Erev was made? Machloikis, Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes. Rav Nachman says that we don't say Chazak Shlich Osa Shlichusoy. Rav Sheshes says we say Chazak Shlich Osa Shlichusoy. So Tosfos is bothered with this question. What's Rav Sheshes going to do? What's our Gemara going to do with the Gemara Masechta Erevin? So Tosfos is saying that obviously our Gemara is following the opinion of Rav Nachman that holds that by a deraisa, we hold Chazaka ein shlich oisa shlichusai, and therefore we can't rely to assume that the shlich did the shlichus. That's how most Mefarshim explain what Tosfos is coming to teach us, because according to Rav Sheshes, he says, we do say chazak shlich usa shlich usay, so how can we say differently here? That's one way of understanding Tosfos. The Chasam Sofer has a very different approach, very nice approach to the Chasam Sofer. He says as follows, as I said, clearly according to Rav Sheshes, and even according to Rav Nachman by the Rabbonim, or by the Raisa where it's a Chumrah, he holds shlich usa shlich usay. And our Gemara here assumes the chazak ein shlich usa shlich usay. How do we reconcile our Gemara with the Gemara Masechta Erevin? So the Chasam Sofer says there are two very different stories going on here. Over there, what happened? I asked you to put an Erev up on my behalf, and you accepted the assignment. What is the question? Did you or did you not do it? So the Gemara says, Chazak Shlich Osa Shlich Usay. If I asked you to do something, and you agreed to do it, we could assume you did it. Our Gemara, it's a different question. We know it was done. We see the slaughtered animal. We see the truma taken off. We just don't know, was it you that did it, or was it someone else? So the Tosfos is saying that the two sugyas aren't the same because the cases that we think about them are very different. So ask the Gemara, if we're assuming now, let's learn again the Gemara, Pasha Pshat, the Ein Chazaka, Shlich Osa Shlich Usa, we don't assume that Shlich does the Shchita. So why by the Shchita are we Mekel? Says the Gemara, because the Shchita, it's very understandable. Because inami, even inish the alma, sham of ozv shachet, I ask you to shecht. What must we be concerned? We need to be concerned that you didn't shecht, that somebody else did it. So what? We finished saying early in our shir today, roi mitzuin eitz shechita mumchem hay. And therefore, if it wasn't you that shechted it, the person that I asked, so somebody else shechted it, and it's still kosher. However, by truma, we need to be concerned. Dilma inish achrina shama. Maybe somebody else overheard me asking you to take the truma off this product, and he went and did it instead of the person who I asked to do it. V'ozel v'tarim, and therefore falls into the category of tarim shloimidas. V'tarim shloimidas ain't shum masa truma. So Rashi explains the halacha that shlichus works by truma, that you could take off truma on my behalf, because the Torah adds the words gam atem by the parasha of truma, that just like I could take off truma on my produce, so can my shliach. But we learn from them, from that, that just like I only do with das, I know what I'm doing, so too, only the shliach that I appointed could take truma. The person who I didn't ask can't do it. So the Rishonim and Achronim ask the obvious question. We have a klal throughout Shas, Zochon L'Adam Shlo B'Fonav. If somebody's doing something to my benefit, even if he didn't get consent from me or appointed from me, it's acceptable. So why over here by Truma don't we apply this case, this rule? And even though I didn't ask you to take the Truma off on my behalf, you're doing me a favor. So it should be halachically valid. So the Rashba says it's a gzeiras hakasef, that by Truma, Tzachiyah doesn't work. And I think Pshat and the Rashba, everybody tries to understand Pshat and the Rashba. I think Pshat and the Rashba is as follows. The Torah, by going out of its way, saying atem gam atem, is teaching us that maybe in all other areas of halacha, Tzachiyah works. Here, Tzachiyah doesn't work. That's one teretz I saw. Another teretz that I saw, very nice teretz, is that we know the midaraisa chita achas pateres asakri. Taking off one kernel is adequate. The Rabbanim said a 40th, a 50th, a 60th. So when you're taking truma on my behalf, so if you're my shliach, so I told you what to do. But if you're not my shliach, you don't know what I want. And therefore you can't take it off. So I saw, beautiful vart, from the Sharm Tzion Balacha. He says that's only in the time when truma was indeed given to the kohen. So there are different shurim, a 40th, a 50th, a 60th, and only my shliach really knows what I want. But Bezmana said that the truma is burnt, or when we take off challah, the challah is burnt, so we just take off the minimum, so that according to this teretz, a shliach would be allowed to take without permission. What are you worried about, that he doesn't know what I want? It's obvious what I want. You just take off the minimum amount, because it's not going to the kohen. Another teretz that I saw, beautiful terutzim, another teretz that I saw is, and we see this in other areas of halacha, is that when I'm memana, when I appoint a shliach, what does my appointing the shliach say? It's not just that I'm appointing you. Halachically, what that statement, as I appoint you, says, I'm appointing you to the exclusion of everyone else. So since I specifically excluded that everyone else cannot take truma on my behalf, therefore, shliach can't work. One more nice teretz. We've said this concept previously in our shurim, I believe. When we take off, when truma is taken, if you really analyze the act, there's two parts to it. There's one part called the hafrosha, the taking off the trumas and the maizras, and the second part is giving to the kohen. So indeed, the part of giving it to the kohen, that you could do without my permission. But the hafrosha, you can't. Because Allah is zochim le'adam, not zochim me'adam. So that part can't be done without permission, and that's an integral part of the afrosh's truma. Suggest the Gemara, Lema, perhaps, this concept that we've been saying in our shir, the red between Eitzel Shechita, Mumchen Hein, is actually Tanoihi. It's actually Machloikus Tanum, the Tanya. We learned in a Braisa. Hareish of the Loi Gedoya, Vitana Goylov. Somebody lost a goat or a chicken for halach matzen shchutim, and now he finds them slaughtered. So before we go further, there's a very interesting machlokes rishonim. The braisa clearly indicates, speaking about a case where my animal was lost, and I find it, but I find it slaughtered. And we're going to start learning in a moment what is the status of that animal, what is the kashas of that animal. But the rishonim debate, what is the halach if it wasn't lost, it was stolen? Will the same halacha apply? Some Rishonim say, yeah, the same halacha would apply. Why did the Braisa choose to speak about a lost case, a lost animal versus a stolen? Because a lost animal is more likely to be found than a stolen animal. But the same thing would apply. But then there are Rishonim that take a very different approach. They say, if it's a stolen animal, so I have to be concerned that who shechted the animal? The ganef. And a ganef is not kosher to be a shaychet, because he's a mumer. He's a ganef. We have to be concerned that the ganef perhaps is a goy, or even if he's not a goy, but he's a mumer, he's a ganef. So I saw a very interesting vart. It's a very powerful point that these Rishonim are making. If it was stolen, we need to be concerned that the ganef was the one that shechted it. And a ganef, we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, we're still going to discuss it again, that a mumer is a possible shaychet. So how can we indeed have a mandomer that we're about to learn in a moment say that this animal, this bird, would be kosher? So the Sefer Tzvila Tzadik, I saw quotes, and unfortunately we find this in life, that people, there are two types of mitzvahs. We know there are two categories of mitzvahs. There are mitzvahs that are ben odom l'chaveroi, and there are mitzvahs that are ben odom l'mokum. He says that it's very common to find in human nature that people don't care about mitzvahs that are ben odom l'chaveroi. Person's a ganef. He'll steal somebody else. But from, he's very from. And he's a kush, and he's a great shaychet. So that's why, even though he's a ganef, he could still be a great shaychet. So, what is the halacha? So the Gemara quotes a brice, a machlokes. Rav Yehuda says you can't eat this animal, this bird. Rav Chanina ben Yosef says glili mata. Amar Rebbe. So Rebbe makes the following comment. Nirin dvarm shel Rebbe Yehuda, shematzim ba'ashpa. If the animal, the bird, is found in a garbage dump, then Rabbi Yehuda is right. Because it's a pretty good indication that why is it in the garbage? Because it's an avela. On the other hand, v'divrei Rav Chanina ben Yosef Yosef glili, shematzim ba'ayis. If you found that at home, it's a pretty good indication that the animal is kosher. But that's not what Rebbe's saying. But before we look at Rebbe's comment, if we just look at the machloikis of Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Chanina ben Yosef Yosef glili, Rabbi Yehuda is always holding that this meat is treif, and Rav Chanina is always holding the meat is kosher. Why? What is the machloikis? Says Dumar, my la bahakamufki. The mass of her, Rav Chanina obviously is of the opinion, Roy Mitzuina Tashkita Mumhuahim. And therefore I could assume that whoever shechted it, whatever, whoever he is, shechted it properly. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion, mass of her, Roy Mitzuina Tashkita Mumhuahim. And therefore I can't be so certain that it was slaughtered properly, and I may not eat it. Says Dumar. So now the Gemara suggested that that's the machlaikis. This issue of Roy Mitzuin Eitz Shechita Mumchum or not is the subject of the machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Chanina. Says the Gemara, no. That's not necessarily at all. Aram Nachman Be'yitzchak Loi the Kul Alma Roy Mitzuin Eitz Shechita Mumchum. Everybody could agree that Roy Mitzuin Eitz Shechita Mumchum. Furthermore, he says, over bias, if the animal, the bird, was found in the house, the Kul Alma Le'pligi Dishari, it's fine. Why? Because we could safely assume that it was slaughtered properly. On the other hand, Bashbish of a Shuk, if it's found in the public garbage dump, Kulam Leplig Dasar. Why would it be put there if it wasn't an Avela? If it wasn't non-kosher? Kipligi, what is their subject of Machlaikis? Bashbish of a Bias. If it was found in the garbage, but not in the public garbage, in the garbage at home. Masover, Odom Osu Lahatil Nivlasa Bashbish of a Bias. Sometimes it's more convenient to throw it in the Avela and they garbage in your home, not to carry it out to the shuk. Or masover, ein adam osu lahatul nevosu ba'ashbish ba'bayis. So if it's in the house, it's an indication it's not an avela. Of course, the Chassam Sofer asked the question that it's hard to assume that the entire machloikis is on human psychology. Where do you throw, on human behavior, not even psychology. Where do you throw out your nevelas? Only in the public garbage or even in the garbage at home. Is that what their machloikis is about? So he tries to turn into a little more of a lamdish machlokes. He says there are many roivs working here. On one hand, we have a roiv, the roiv mitzuyin eitz shechita mumchmehim. We have a roiv that most animals are kosher. On the other hand, we have a problem that it was stolen, that was found in the garbage and was stolen. So the machlokes is, since you have all these roivs competing, which are the more powerful, very connected to the previous year, which is the more powerful roiv that we should follow? Omar, but now the Gemara asked the following question. Rebbe made a statement. Nirin de Rebbe Yehuda shematzim ba'ashpa. That when it was found in the garbage dump, Rebbe Yehuda will follow Rebbe Yehuda's psak, and it'll be considered treif. My ashpa. What ashpa is Rebbe referring to? Elai ma ashpa shebishok. If it's in the garbage dump outdoors, so it's not just Rebbe Yehuda that holds that way. We just finished learning. It's not Rebbe Yehuda's opinion. It's even Rebbe Chanina's opinion. There's no argument, we just said. Elolaf. What is Rebbe Yehuda saying? Then not only if it was found in the outdoor garbage dump will I consider it not kosher, Pshita b'ashpa shebabayis. I hold that Rebbe Yehuda is right, and when it's found in the ashpa shebabayis, we should consider it non-kosher. Fine. Continues the Gemara. Let's look at the next statement Rebbe Yehuda made. The Rebbe made. And I agree with the opinion of Chanina ben Noshe Rebbe Yosef Glilis Shemotz Mabayis. So again, what does that mean? My bias. What does Rebbe mean when he says that if it was found in the house, I'll say that Rebbe Chanina is right, and I'll consider the meat kosher? Elay Mabayis Mamish, that it's found on the table at home. So I don't have to follow Rebbe Chanina's opinion. We just finished saying, I'm at the Kulam Lo Plig D'Shari. Everybody agrees that we consider it kosher then. Ella, what's he referring to? Bash Bishop Abayis. That not only if it's found on your kitchen table will I consider it kosher, but even if you find it in the Ashba, but it's the Ashba Shabbat Bayis, not the Ashba Shabbat Shuk, it's going to be considered kosher. So we have a Gevaldik Kasha, Kasha the Rebbe, the Rebbe, the Rebbe. The first part of Rebbe's statement seems to indicate that if it's found by Ashba Shabbat Bayis, it's considered non-kosher. The second part of Rebbe's statement seems to indicate that it's found by Ashba Shabbat Bayis, it's considered not kosher. So how do we reconcile this? Says the Gemara Hakama. The way to understand the statement is as follows. Nirin divrei Rabbi Yehuda l'Rabbi Yosi l'Rabbi Chanina b'nai Rabbi Yosi Aglili, that even though Rabbi Chanina is the makel, Rabbi Yehuda always holds a treif, and Rabbi Chanina holds its kosher, says Rabbi, there's going to be a case Rabbi Chanina is going to agree with Rabbi Yehuda. Where? V'ashra shebishuk. If it's found in the public garbage dump. Sh'af Rabbi Chanina b'nai Rabbi Yosi Aglili, who is the makel, when is he makel versus Rabbi Yehuda? El Abashu Shabbayis. When it's found in the garbage dump in the house. Aval Shabbashu Shabbashuk. Even Rabbi Chanina, the big makel, Mardalei, will agree to Rabbi Yehuda that we should consider a treif. So we finally get back to analyzing our Mishnah on that base. The Mishnah said, Chutz Mecher Shait V'Katan, the Mishnah said that even by the Evid, we can't accept the shechita of a cheres shayta b'katan. Shem yekalkulus shechitasin. We're concerned that they may do ruin it. But the Gemara right away picks up on the wording of the Mishnah. Shem akilkul loiktani. What would the Mishnah, should the Mishnah have said? That we should be concerned that if they shechted, they didn't shecht properly. But that's not what the Mishnah said. The Mishnah says that we're concerned shem yekalkulu, that they may shecht improperly. That's not what the Mishnah is saying. The Mishnah is saying that if they shechted, unsupervised, we don't accept their shechita. But that isn't the wording of the Mishnah. Answers the Gemara, Amar Rava, what the Mishnah is teaching us is, Anu Alocha. That even though we learned at the end of the Mishnah, that if you supervise the cheres shayt of a katan, the shechita is acceptable by the Yavid, the Mishnah is teaching us, don't rely on that lechatchila. Why? So I saw many different explanations in the Rishonim. One explanation I saw in the Rishonim is that even if you supervise them, since they're cher shayt of a cotton, we need to be concerned they're not going to do it right. And the animal, or the bird, will end up becoming a nevela, which is baltashkes. So l'chatchila, don't take a shaykhit who is likely to make your animal not kosher. One pshat. Another pshat that I saw is that goes back to something we discussed at the beginning of the shiur. Even if you're supervising somebody, supervision is only that good. It can't be perfect. And as we've been learning, and we'll continue learning in our shiurim, shechita, even the smallest disqualification, makes your shechita invalid, a shia drusa. So you're indeed supervising the chayr shayt of a katan, but can you really be sure that he didn't make a shia? Can you really be sure that he didn't make a drusa? And therefore don't rely on him. Third pshat that I saw, it goes back to also an issue that we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, that there's a shayla about chulin shenas or taras ha-kaydish. Is it treated like chulin? Is it treated like kaydish? We said that chulin shenas or taras ha-kaydish should be considered like chulin. But the Gemara is saying that there are people that are considered like Kodesh. And by Kodesh, you can't have a Cheresh Ayit or a Katan Shechting. A fourth pshat, I think we quoted this from Tysus at the beginning of the Masechta, is that Tysus says as follows. Tysus says, let's say you're having a Cheresh Ayit or a Katan Shecht. They're not Shechting for human consumption. They're Shechting for animal consumption. Animals don't have to eat kosher meat. Still, the Chatchila, you shouldn't let them Shecht. Why? Because we're concerned that somebody sees the Cheresh Ayit of a Katan Shechting unsupervised, doesn't know the reason he's Shechting it because it's not for human consumption, or it's not for consumption for people who have to eat kosher, and can make the error in believing that Shechit could be done by them, L'Chatchila. Continues the Mishnah. We learned in the Mishnah, Kul Sheshach Bechein Rois and the son, if they were supervised, Shechitas and Ksheira. The Shechit is Ksheira. And as the Rishonim point out, even though we spent a lot of time on the Beis and the Gimel, saying that this line of the Mishnah, according to many opinions, is not speaking about a Cheresh Ayit V'Katan, it meant that it's not speaking only about a Cheresh Ayit V'Katan, but it's clearly speaking about a Cheresh Ayit V'Katan as well. We only said because of the word V'Kulon, it must be speaking about somebody else as well. So obviously, our Mishnah is teaching us that a Cheresh Ayit V'Katan could shecht on if they were supervised. Ask the Gemara Mantana, the Bloy Be'inin Kavana L'Shchita. Who's the man, the Amid, that holds that you don't have to have Kavana? Because a Cheresh Ayit V'Katan obviously don't have the ability to have Kavana. Says the Gemara, Amar Rava, Reb Nosson. It's the opinion of Reb Nosson. The Tana, Oisha Z'ira D'min Chavraya. The two Peshatim, the Rishonim, had to understand this. Some say it was Oisha Z'ira D'min Chavraya, who was the youngest in the yeshiva. Or another pshat is that this is his name. His name was Oisha Z'ira. That was the name of this Amira. The Min, Chavraya, he came from the city Chavraya. That taught us the following halacha. Zorak Sak and Lanoitza Bekaisel. Somebody threw a knife in order that it should penetrate the wall. And as it's traveling, the Holch of Shachta Kedarka, it shechs an animal. Reb Nosson Machshir. You had no kavana here. The kavana was to throw the knife at the wall. Still it's kasha. V'chama paisvim. Hu tanev la, v'hu amla. He quoted this brisa, and he said, halach Reb Nosson. So what do we see from here? That kavana is not required. Very big machlaikas rishonim. So we have here machlaikas, Reb Nosson Rabbanon, if kavana is required. And Agamar is clearly teaching us that kavana is not required. The question is, what does that mean when we say that according to Reb Nosson, kavanah is not required? Doesn't mean no kavanah at all is required. And then the Rabbanon will hold, as long as you have kavanah to slit the simanim, it's good enough. Or will it be that Reb Nosson says you have to have some sort of intent? You have to have intent to kill the animal. You don't have to have kavanah to shecht. And the Rabbanon will hold that not only intent to kill the animal is not alone and not good enough, you have to have kavanah shechita. Machlokes Rishonim. So he's saying from here we see that kavanah is not required. But ask the Gemara, v'be'inam melech mevi. We've learned so many times that how is the proper shechita done? V'ray locha v'va. So even if I'm throwing the knife and it goes right over the neck of the animal and it slits the animal's neck, you only had one motion. You had the halacha. You didn't have the hava, and the lochas you have to have halacha vayva. Answers the Gemara, shalcha ba'kadarka. What happened here was that it went back and forth. Incredible story. It went over the neck of the animal, so did the halacha, and then it went back over the neck, it ricocheted off the wall, and went back over the neck of the animal, so you have halacha vayva. The Rishonim actually ask that the Gemara could have said a much simpler teretz. The halacha is that if you have a very large knife with a very large blade, you don't have to have a halacha vayva. So why don't the Gemara just say that this teretz is somewhat of a forced teretz? So why don't the Gemara just say that it went, you threw it with a long knife? So they say typically in those days they didn't use long knives. They used knives with shorter blades. So the Gemara did not want to say that teretz that involves using a short-bladed knife. Before we begin, the next Gemara. The Gemara speaks about three halacha categories: machshava, maisa, and maisav nikar, machshava nikaris mitoich maisav. The way Rashi explains machshava is that all you had here is that a statement was made, but there's no act accompanying that statement. Maisa means that there was a statement of intent made, coupled with a maisa. Machshava nikeres mitoich maisa was there was no statement made, but if you look at the person's act, it's pretty indicative of what he meant to do. That's how Rashi learns the Gemara. That's where we're going to learn the Gemara. The other Rishonim say that there's no need for statements. All you need to have is different levels. Machshava means it's very hard to understand what he meant. Maisa means it's very easy to understand that this was his intent. Machshava in the Keres B'Tach Maisav is that it's not 100% clear. So begins the Gemara. Arachi bar Abba, boy Reb Yochanan, katan yesh lemachshava ein lemachshava. Does a katan machshava count or not? Amalei Reb Ami, v'tabay le Maisa. Why are you asking about machshava? Why don't you ask about Maisa? Says the Gemara, Maishna Maisa, d'lokam ebaylon. Why are you not asking about Maisa? The Tanan, because the Mishnah clearly teaches us, yesh la Maisa, that the katan has when the katan did something, whatever pshat that we just learned, the Maisa is coupled with a dibur, with a statement. It's very clear that that's what he meant. So the Gemara, if that's the way you're going to learn, Machshava nami loy tabaylon. Then there's no question on Machshava alone that what they do isn't valid. The Tanan, ein la Machshava. It clearly says in the Mishnah that a Machshava alone by Katan is inadequate. The Tanan, the Mishnah Masechta Kelim teaches us, Ha'alon, Va'arimoin, Va'egois, you have these different knots, Shechokkum Tinoikis, that the child howled them out. And the question is, are they Kelim? Because if they're Kelim, they're Makabal Tumah. Shechokkum Tinoikis, Lomed Bem Offer, to use to measure earth, or Shiskinim L'Kaf Mizna'im, to be used as for weight, Tmeim. And then Shiesh L'Maisa. Here, there was a Maisa with a Machshava, and it says here clearly the Maisa they have, but a Machshava alone, they don't have. So right now what we're up to, before we end the shir, is that the Mishnah seems to teach us that Machshava alone is not enough by a cotton, Maisa alone is enough by a cotton. A number of important points to be made. One is that Tosfos asks that we learned the Masechta Zvachim and Masechta Menachos actually many times that the halacha is Tom L'Shma, that if an animal was slaughtered without any machshava, as long as it wasn't slaughtered with the wrong machshava, machshava Shlo L'Shma, machshava Spigel, it's good enough. So you see, you don't have to have any machshava and it's still good. So why is machshava required by a katan? And Rav Aaron actually strengthens Tosfos Kasha. Because we learned, at the beginning of Masechta Zvachim, we spoke about this a lot, that Rashi says that it's only considered that the animal was slaughtered improperly if he verbalized the wrong machshava. So why, when a child didn't verbalize the wrong machshava, is it worse than stam l'shma? So Tosfos and the Rishonim answer, there's a difference between when a gadol shechts stoma and a katan. A gadol has the ability to have das. So the halacha is, even if he didn't verbalize, or even if he didn't think it, stoma l'shma, but he's a bar das. A katan is not a bar das. And therefore, for his shechita to be considered a valid shechita, it has to be done with the proper machshava. Or at least, and it has to be clear that he's having the proper machshava maisa. Furthermore, Dar Sameach points out that even though our Gemara, where we end the Shia today, is teaching us that a katan has Maisa, and where it's obvious that he had the right intent, and his actions and his words point in that direction, it's halachically valid, that doesn't mean that every time a katan, where every time it's 100% obvious that a katan does something, it's going to be halachically valid. Meaning, says Dar Sameach, we know one of the principles that we learned numerous times in Shas is, let's say Cotton's going to enter a business transaction. And there's no question, he says it and he shows it, and everybody knows that he is serious about this business transaction. So we know that it still wouldn't be considered a halakhically valid transaction. Why? Why? If our Gemara is teaching us, as we're up to at this point, that when it's clear that he had a proper mice and a proper machshav, it's valid, so why isn't it valid every time when he does a sale or he buys something? So Osamek's approach is that there's two concepts in halacha. There's a concept of das, and there's a concept of rotzen. So he says a cotton has das, but a cotton doesn't have rotzen. And for something to be considered a halachically valid business transaction, you have to have rotzen, not just das. That's how Dar Samech explains it. Rabbi Chanan has a different approach. Rabbi Chanan's approach is as follows. In halacha, there's a concept called chalois. I'm not even sure how you say it in English. But chalois means that something becomes finalized. He says there are two types of chalois. This is a beautiful word, a lomdush word. He says there are two types of chalois. Sometimes a chalois happens by itself, and sometimes you have to make a chalois. What are two examples? Exactly what we're learning in today's shiur. Shechita, after you shecht an animal, after you properly shecht an animal, it's a kosher animal. You don't have to say it's kosher. It automatically becomes kosher. If the shechita was done properly, the chalois comes by itself. But sometimes you have to make the chalois. He says, ketanim don't have the ability to make a chalois. So not a gemara is very geschmack. Shechita, where the chalois happens by itself, so cotton has the ability to make the chalois, to make the shechita, and it automatically will become kosher. A kinyan, a transaction, requires that you finalize the deal. And the cotton doesn't have that ability, and that's why, even if our Gemara is teaching us that ketanim have maisa, they still can't make kinyanim.